We are finishing tonight our series in the book of James, and I taught this morning, and so I'm not going to teach tonight. We're going to do something better than hearing me talk. We're going to hear two people that I love share their story, which is going to be a blast. I kind of gave like a little bit of a preview about this story earlier when I was teaching this morning, but James 5, 7 through 11 was going to be the last passage that I taught, and this passage is all about patience in suffering. And we were talking about this in the prayer team before. This, like, patience and suffering, patience, that's like the last thing that we want to hear when we talk about suffering. And typically, stories about suffering are way better than sermons on suffering. And so tonight, we're going to hear from Barry and Becky Swihart. And they're actually small group leaders for 710. I love them so much. But before we do, I'm going to actually read our passage tonight. We're not going to be, like, dissecting this passage, but this is going to be, like, kind of our launch pad into our conversation that I'm really excited to have. So this is James 5. It says, "Be patient then, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, patiently waiting for the autumn and spring rains. You too be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Don't grumble against one another, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged, because the judge is standing at the door. Brothers and sisters, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. And as you know, we count as blessed those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion, and he is full of mercy." And so, guys, will you help me welcome Barry and Becky Swihart up to stage? And you guys can admire Barry's cool hair as he walks up. He grew it out this year, and I'm a little jealous because I can't do that. How are you guys?
Great.
Great. Well, maybe we can just start by, why don't you guys introduce yourselves a little bit to the community? Maybe share your names. I know I've shared your names already, but how long have you been at the church?
Barry.
You're Barry and you're Becky.
My name's Becky.
Nice to meet you, Barry and Becky. Maybe share a little bit about yourselves, like how long you've lived in Arizona, maybe how you met a little bit, and whatever you kind of want to share.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. It's kind of cool to be in an event like this, because it is at an event like this that I met Becky.
Oh, that's yes. Right. That's right.
25 years ago.
What was the ministry called again?
23. 18 to 24. Would you like to guess why it was called 18 to 24? Nobody likes to guess. Okay.
No, they're
ages
they're quiet.
18 to 24. This is who showed up at that event, and we were both 18 to 24.
Yeah. I feel like college ministries, we just pick numbers anyway.
Yeah.
It's just what we do.
Yeah, so that was 23-ish, not 25. Yeah. But we've been married 20 years this last January.
Congrats.
Thank you. The woman of my dreams.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I'm gonna leave it there. What about you, Becky?
Let me ask you this.
You don't have to say that.
Yeah.
Okay.
We moved here about 10 years ago and have been coming here ever since.
Yeah. From Texas?
From Texas, yeah. We got three kids, 17, 15, and 8, right there. Say what's up, Bear.
Well, what's up, Bear? Say hi, Bear.
And maybe a year and a half ago, we started leading an awesome home group, Bussin RC. Where are y'all?
That's right. You guys were just up skiing this weekend, too.
Yes, well, yes. I retired from skiing.
That's
but
right.
Some skiers, yeah.
These guys right here on the front row, right?
We do have video of people jumping off of cliffs, if anyone would like to see that.
Carson.
Lots of ibuprofen.
Yep. That's great.
Yes. Okay.
And you guys, in Texas, you guys know Matt Chandler? They were at Matt Chandler's church in Texas, which I think is pretty cool, and then we stole them out here in Arizona. So maybe we can just jump into some of the story. Was it 2021? You were diagnosed with Parkinson's?
Yes.
And so maybe we can just start with the story of how that came to be, and
yeah, that feels a little like my diagnosis was like jump into this. There's no really way to jump into it. It's
no.
Just like you. When I was diagnosed, it was like, okay, you've got Parkinson's. Do you have any questions? There's no good transition.
How did that come about? Like, what?
Yeah. So, Becky, she, are y'all familiar with Peloton? Okay. Look her up. She's Sweaty Becky. That's her code name. Sweaty Becky. Anyways, she's a boss when it comes to Peloton. And we started noticing that it just wasn't like it used to be. The strength in any the right leg was just not the same. And her PRs, personal records, for those of you not familiar, they weren't being met. And not that it's about that, but it was an initial indicator that something was wrong. Mm. I also remember Becky was brushing her teeth, and she noticed that she couldn't do it quite as well.
I had to brush my teeth with two hands. Mm. It was just strange. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. My shoulder's weak. I saw lots of physical therapists and thought it was my back, thought it was my hip. Yeah.
Yeah. So we did a lot of things. Becky had a surgery, went to many, didn't go to the chiropractor. Becky doesn't feel good about chiropractors. Sorry if you're a chiropractor or one in training. went to a lot of physical therapists. And I remember we went out to Jason and Jenny. They're here. Went out to Jason and Jenny's place in Georgia. That is Becky's sister and my sister-in-law. So she saw one of the best in Georgia physical therapists. And was it the second visit that that physical therapist says, this is bigger than physical therapy. There's something else wrong here. So that was in June. We came home, and I believe it was July 3rd or July 2nd of 2021, that we went to a physician, and there had been some tests done. And looking at those tests, he saw a white dot on her brain, and bedside manner was not the best. But he said, are you familiar with, was it muscular dystrophy?
Yeah.
So my dad has muscular dystrophy, and so I was very familiar.
I'm sorry. It was MS.
I'm sorry. It was multiple sclerosis. Yeah. MS. Sorry. We've been told as a lot of things.
I know.
Yes. I forget the order.
Hey, real quick. You said she had a surgery. Was that to try to fix what was going on, and it was like?
Well, yeah. So I had a back surgery because I had back issues, and then I had my whole right side was kind of acting funky, like I couldn't brush my teeth or scramble legs or something. But I thought it was my shoulder. Nobody thinks it's a neurological disorder.
Yeah.
And then my right leg was kind of lagging and just not, it was hurting. Looking back, it was rigidity, which is part of Parkinson's. But so I mean, the physical therapist couldn't do anything. I was in great shape. We just couldn't figure it out. So I was like, maybe it's, I had so many answers. And every time I was like, I think this is it. And then it would fall through. And I think this is it, fall through. And then finally I was like, I think it's a, I don't even remember, whatever. But I saw a hip doctor, and he said it's a labral tear that's causing some tendonitis. Mm. So I had and I probably did have a labral tear. You guys probably have many labral tears out here that are just non-consequential. So, but really, I think I was probably still even in the hospital from that surgery going, that wasn't it. That wasn't it. So then we saw the PT. I'm sorry, I'm taking over. We saw the PT, and he said basically kind of like, I think you have MS. I think this is neurological. So I went to see. He was like, you need a better doctor than me. He sent me to Barrow. And Barrow was this, like, teaching fellow, and he's got his person he's teaching. And he basically was like, okay, well, good news. You know, you don't have MS. And I was like, oh. And then he explained something else to me, and we leave. And I'm looking at the paperwork, and the paperwork says diagnosis likely motor neuron disease, which, do you guys know Doug?
Doug Clow. He comes in the back often. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got a pseudo-diagnosis for ALS. Mm. So he sent me to, he sent me to refer me to an ALS doctor.
He sent her to an ALS doctor, and we went through a few tests there and discovered that it wasn't ALS, but only after many a visit. Mm.
Okay, I thought you were gonna.
How about that segue?
So, the day that I went into the ALS doctor, I walked in and he was like, "You don't have ALS," and I was wearing my "All of Life is All for Jesus" shirt, and so that was, he just gave me a reprieve. He knew I had Parkinson's. He didn't tell me, which was honestly just God's grace. Hmm. So I was leaving Barrow, and I saw Doug and Karen in a room. They're not here. I saw Doug and Karen, and then I just kind of had to double turn, and I went back, and I just said, I just wanted to tell him the good news, and I wanted to say I'm so sorry, and I see you, and it sucks, and I'm glad I'm not in your in this club, and he just was so happy. He was just he said. He'd been praying for somebody. He said, I knew somebody at the church was facing this diagnosis, and I've been praying for somebody I didn't know was you. And he said when he saw me walking down the hall and he saw my shirt, he thought, oh, I bet that's who I was praying for. But wow. Just was really, wow. It was powerful to see God's community and the church specifically. So.
Yeah. And you'll hear more about this as we go through the story, but it is one of the first times in this journey where God showed up.
Yeah. So like I said, so he knew I had, the doctor said, you don't have ALS. So then that was a few days, and he got me in to see his wife, who is the Parkinson's doctor. And she basically was like, well, you have Parkinson's. Do you have any questions? And then we got to come home and figure that out.
Yeah.
So Parkinson's, for those of you who don't know, it is very common in people just like Becky. Male, 70 plus. All joking aside, it's very rare for a female of Becky's age to be diagnosed with this disease. Parkinson's is a neuromuscular disease that, in essence, it takes away the dopamine, and dopamine is what you need in order for your brain to send to your muscles the signals to move. So, which explains why Becky was having a challenge brushing her teeth or Pelotoning.
Yeah, it starts out affecting one side of your body, but you can have rigidity, which is just what it sounds like. Slowness. I often will freeze. Like, can y'all hear me? Okay, yeah. Okay. I often will freeze. Like, just you don't have to think about walking. Nobody has to think about walking, but for some reason, it's like my body's went from automatic to manual. So I can move my leg, but it takes me a minute. I have to like tell my leg like move. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but yeah. And then there's tremor. There's really kind of two different types of PD, which is one's more tremor dominant and the other's more balance and gait. And I have the latter. So.
Yeah.
I think it's also important to note, and again, you'll hear more about this as we answer more of your questions, I would assume. But Parkinson's, it does not kill you. It just changes your life. It affects it in a way that progressively it does get worse. But unlike Doug with ALS, oftentimes that's a death sentence. Yeah. And so we were very thankful that we did not have ALS. But nonetheless, at 41 at the time, thinking that, hey, this is Parkinson's, and we would hope we've got a lot more years left on this earth,
yeah,
we're going to see that those years are going to get progressively worse.
Yeah. Well, I do want to get to like kind of the three things that you said, but before that, I'm curious, like when you receive a diagnosis like that, there's the immediate shock, I'm assuming, of like, what the heck, like all the, you know, the dreams and imagining the future. How would you describe like the first week or two, the first month after the diagnosis? Like, can you maybe take us into your world a little bit of all the things you were processing? Was it anger, sadness? What are you doing, Lord? All the above. Maybe just take us into that world a little bit.
Okay, I'll go first. I'll give you a minute. So I think I mentioned, well, I did mention that I got a pseudo diagnosis of ALS. So during that time, I remember, being excited to see the Lord sooner than later. Mm. And I remember thinking, like, this is, my faith is real. I really do believe this. Like, this is, the end is possibly coming sooner than later. And I'm still, I still want to pursue the Lord. Does that make sense? I didn't want to run and question or I don't know. It just, so then when I was diagnosed with Parkinson's, it was easier, if that makes sense, just because it was like, okay, it's not ALS, it's not MS, it's Parkinson's. I mean, there's definitely, I'm still grieving. There was definitely some initial grief.
And I can remember there was a good 2 to 3 weeks where we thought it might be ALS. And we would both cry on the couch. we would cry ourselves asleep. and as the dude in the relationship, I was thinking that I was going to fix it. Mm. And I remember just thinking, man, I can't do anything about this. Mm. The one thing I thought of is that I would just empty the bank account. We would travel the world for whatever number of years we had left. But that's all I had left. That's all that came to mind. So we would have made it to Oklahoma and when we were told that it was Parkinson's, in a way, it was a relief.
Yeah.
And even in that, I don't ever remember asking God why, but what. Mm. Not why us or anything like that, but it was more of what are you doing, but not in an angry way. And my gosh, I certainly am not trying to be holier than thou, but that is, I do believe, something that God blessed me with.
Yeah.
Because throughout all of this, there has been that, God, what are you teaching us? What are you trying to do here? And I don't know that it would have been the same had we not had the experience, the sequence of events,
yeah,
in the order that they occurred. So just yet again, another way God was
loving
us.
Did you have like a, oh my gosh, it's ALS, at least it's Parkinson's, but it's still Parkinson's. And you know what I'm saying? I kind of like picture like two different, like it wasn't like, oh, well, everything's great. There's still a processing and a mourning of wrestling with that. Or maybe it wasn't for you. I don't know. I'm curious. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That totally makes sense. And we've had people ask us, you know, have you gotten to anger yet? And I certainly have had gotten to super frustration and anger, but it's more moments than it has been a season. And maybe I just haven't gotten there yet because it's still pretty fresh. I just lost my train of thought. Okay, so we were in, shortly after diagnosis, we were in a small group, which... we've got some small groupers from there.
Jeff, Jim.
Where's the Swihart RC? Hey.
Yeah.
Amy.
I'm just going to say it. So at the beginning, that was a small group where it was very sweet and very necessary, and we all just really needed each other at the time. So we had the first, instead of a lesson, we got to kind of all share our stories for the first few weeks. And I can remember... laying in bed with Barry and saying, like, people are really suffering, you know, we've got friends that are really going through some heavy stuff and some big stuff, and we just have Parkinson's, which is so, dumb. Like, Parkinson's is probably the worst, but really, it just depends on what your perspective is and where your focus is.
We don't have to follow this, I think that's a good segue to maybe even talking about the role community mm-hmm. has played in your guys' patience through suffering. So can you guys maybe talk about, if there's anything that initially, I mean, I can ask more questions into this, but is there anything that initially kind of comes to mind in the way that God has met you through community, maybe even unhelpful ways community has tried to love you?
Yeah.
What it's been like experiencing that, just anything that kind of comes to mind, the role of community and suffering for you guys.
Yeah. We will go to Barrow. It's known as one of the best places in the world to go if you have a neuromuscular disease. And it's so wild to see the people that we see in the waiting room. And you begin to just kind of look at them thinking, is that what 50 years from now looks like? Mm. I'm not living another... Becky's long life is in Becky's family, so I'll be dead in about 30 years. But she sitting beside me and us looking at who it is that is there, and you know, as rough as the outlook looks, or as rough as the future might look, we look and we think, man, do they have Jesus, and do they have community? Yeah. Because without both of those, this would have been impossible. Mm. I can remember two or three times, just when I think of community, the gentleman that married us. Are these for me? Or,
yeah. All of us.
The gentleman that married us, he would send me a text message that had one word, and it said praying. And the times that message came in were perfect.
Wow.
I can remember Jason and Jenny. I was at... I wasn't going to tell this story because I knew I was going to cry the whole way through it. So I'm going to try and get through it. I was at Arizona and Riggs on my way home from Lowe's. And if you know me, I spend a fair amount of time at Lowe's and Home Depot. So I'm on my way home. And I remember Jason saying, no questions asked. We're going to move. I'm like, dude, we don't even know what this is yet. And yet that was... their commitment.
Wow.
To pack up their crap and move all the way across the country for us. Mm. And then there was our small group that was just a way to kind of group therapy, if you will. It was kind of a way to get it out. There was also Doug. I can remember texting back and forth with Doug, and I mean this with the utmost respect. I just kept thinking, here's a dude that, frankly, has it worse off, and yet he's pouring into us.
Wow.
Chuck Bishop, he has been wonderful through all this. I've considered him a mentor for the last 8 to 9 years. And their small group is a group of people that could be our parents. And knowing that they were praying for us and texting us or telling our parents who happened to be in their small group that they were doing so. Little things like that just made a huge difference. And I think there's also a flip side of that, to where we do have friends, and maybe you could speak to that, where the friends that loved us differently and maybe didn't see us, That was kind of the flip side of the good that I was sharing.
I get to tell the...
Yeah, I want to be the good guy.
I get to tell... Oh, no. I've certainly learned through this diagnosis. I was... it's never comfortable. It's never comfortable coming to anybody that's suffering or that lost someone or that has a diagnosis or some whatever that's going through suffering. Like, you don't know what to say, right? I can remember somebody made a comment to me about, like, is anybody checking on Barry? Because I'm sure Becky has all these people checking on her. And I was like, no, actually, everybody's checking on Barry because it's so much easier, and nobody's checking on me because that's really difficult. And I was absolutely one of those people that was like, I don't know what to say, so I'm not going to say anything. So after my diagnosis, I have so much grace for those that don't say anything, because that was me. I've got a friend in here right now that her husband was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and I just froze. I didn't do anything. It took me days to actually come to her in person and just tell her I was there for her. But and I have since been able to apologize. But I will say, just advice for anybody that's, you know, if you have a friend that's going through something, just say something. Even if it's just, hey, I heard. I have no idea what to say. Say that it sucks, and I don't know what to say, and I'm gonna stop there before I say something wrong.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. So,
I think that was one of the most freeing things for me that you said at lunch last Sunday. We went to Fuzzy's Tacos last week and had lunch and got to do this before we actually did this. And I know I'm guilty of this. It's like, even people that I don't have like a texting relationship with, or I like, they're kind of like in passing, like people I love, but I just don't talk to them that directly all the time. And when you hear something that they're going through, it feels weird to now jump in. It's like, do what it. Do I even say? And I know you kind of alluded to it already, but like, you're saying just say something.
Yeah.
Even if it's the wrong thing.
Oh, I had so many people say all kinds of weird, strange things. Or have you tried a barometric chamber?
Everybody has their fix.
Everybody's got marijuana. Like, marijuana fixes everything. all kinds of. But I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. I mean, just that they see me is it feels...
Yeah.
Feels good.
I didn't prep you guys with this question, but I'm thinking of it as I'm listening. How does Satan tempt you in your suffering? And how do you combat that? And that could be different for you both individually apart from one another. Maybe what role community has played or not played in kind of that. But how would you say, because I just, you know, whether it's for myself or walking with people in this ministry, there's all sorts of temptations based on personality and past wounds. It's to isolate or to, like, over-distract, to try to, like, just avoid the pain. How has Satan maybe tempted you through this?
You got some?
Yeah.
Fire away.
Let's see. How has Satan... I tend to cope with just shopping, distracting myself, online shopping or
true.
Home decorating, whatever. But
when I'm not suffering, that's a temptation.
Yeah, for sure. But it really, at the end of the day, like nothing. I'm still uncomfortable. I'm like, so it's like, okay, oh, I just found this great deal, whatever. And it's exciting. And then it's just kind of over. And then it's like, okay, well, do I do this again? Or should I actually go to the Word? Or should I, I have found this to be 100% true. Jenny. When I am suffering and when I'm just have thoughts of future that are just discouraging, my only comfort is thinking of eternity. Is thinking. Tom Schrader has a comment that he says, no matter how bad the suffering gets, it can only last a lifetime. So just keeping my thoughts on eternity.
And I would say for myself, I am a control enthusiast. Some of you know me as the leader of leaders. Inside joke. But man, I enjoy control. And there are times that Satan tempts me with the idea that I can do something. I can do something about this. I can fix this. And I was too dumb to go to college and barely got out of high school, so let alone have an MD behind my name, and even those dudes can't figure out this Parkinson's. So it's just this temptation that Satan is saying, yeah, but maybe you're the guy. Maybe you could invest in the right fix or the right medicine, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Do you want to say something else?
Well, kind of along those lines about being a control enthusiast, I don't know. I'm just trying to go over like how what are the ways that Satan messes with me with its Parkinson's is, and some of it is just in the idea that we do have control over this, or that I did something, or that I could have enough faith to make this go away. So that's something that I still battle with, and I think I don't know, maybe there's a healthy tension and, you know, Lord, give me the faith. It's hard to pray with 100% faith, you know, like with full faith, like, Lord, you have the power, you can do this, you can make this go away. And then also sit in the, he didn't. So that's something that I wrestle with.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything. This is not, I know I didn't do anything to get this disease. And he's in control of everything, and there's a comfort in that.
Just to double click on that, the balance between praying for praying for healing and praying for the right medicine. If I'm healed, why do I need the medicine? And I think that's another thing that, instead of the book that you referred to me, Living Like Fools, Praying Like Monks, or Praying Like Monks, Living Like Fools.
There you go.
Okay. It's not Praying Like Fools. You got that part right. Reading through that book, it was wonderful to think that God just wants us to pray. He just wants us to speak with Him. He just wants a relationship with Him. And so I think even that, is it healing or is it a medicine? I think that's the devil saying, you know what, let's overthink this a little bit. Yeah. Let's get in the way here. Let's make a hurdle between you and the Father who put this in your life, quite candidly, to probably draw you closer to Him.
Yeah. Well, let's talk maybe a little bit more deeply about how the suffering has affected, it could be positively or negatively, your relationship with God. I mean, two of the things that you said, and we can kind of just launch from anything that you want to talk about in here, but you talked about how suffering makes you long for eternity. I thought that was one of the most beautiful sentences that you said last week. You also said that suffering is used by God to train us. And so maybe you can maybe even compare and contrast a little bit, like your relationships with Jesus pre this suffering. Okay. And then now on the other side of it, like what has changed, what has opened up, what's even been harder. Does that make sense? Because
yeah.
I'm sure there's all sorts of stuff in that.
Oh, okay. There was quite a few. Okay, so I had...
Answer whatever you want. Okay. Don't try to answer everything I just said. But
one of the things that first came to my mind was what's changed pre and post. I have more of a desire for His Word now. I remember when I first got diagnosed, I had all these mantras kind of going through my head, which were Peloton mantras. Like I had Robin Arzon. Anybody? No, she's like the Peloton. Okay, whatever. She's my friend.
Crystal nodded. You know Robin?
I don't know where Crystal is. Okay, yes. But she's in my head, like, you can do this, right? And like, what in the world? Like, Lord, please, like, replace this. Like, I wish that I had scripture running through my head. And I did, and I did. But really, what I kept thinking of was Peloton.
Yeah.
So that's just being completely honest. I don't know if I've actually told anybody that out loud.
This is a safe place. This is the place. Yeah. Let me ask you this. Why were you drawn to scripture more? Like, what was it about scripture that came to life maybe that was new in this season? Why did scripture come to life more for you?
Oh, because it's so much more, it's so much more real. Mm. The Bible's full of suffering.
Yeah.
It's full of laments and people, screwed up people that do messed up things, and yeah, and it's full of healing as well, and miracles, and it's just that's I don't know, that's the truth, and it's comforting to read.
It kind of reminds me of something you said at lunch. I feel like we all have highlighted verses in our minds.
Yeah.
Whether they're actually highlighted or not highlighted, and typically it's not the suffering verses. And there's something about when you actually go into suffering, all those verses are now the highlighted ones, mm-hmm. because, and they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you said something last week about you can't, I don't remember exactly how you said it, something about perspective, and you can't.
It's hard to have perspective without experience.
Yeah. So maybe you can talk out of that and just, what's that meant for you? And
yeah, well, I was actually using that term with my son, who's getting into dating. He's 17. And he thinks the world has ended if the girlfriend's not on board.
Yeah.
But there's
no.
this...
No, like I love it.
Not you, Bear.
I know. We need you front row. This is great.
But I remember that I have the perspective because I've been through that experience a couple times.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago. The experience of feeling Jesus, I was at Alma School in 202, and it's the first time I've ever felt Jesus. I saw an image of Jesus' arms wide open, and he's asking me to bury my face in his chest, and I felt him. Mm. Talk about that is a heck of a lot easier if you've been in that situation. Mm. There are multiple opportunities where, for example, right after we were told that it may be MS, I remember spending 3 hours on the phone in my office calling every doctor only to be told, I can see in 6 weeks, I can see in 5 weeks. And, you know, being the guy that wanted to fix it, I was thinking, I can find that doctor. I don't care if he's a crappy one. I'm gonna get in to see that doctor, and we're gonna fix this. Mm. And even crappy doctors weren't seeing us soon. Mm. And I came out of my office, and Becky was on the phone. With one of those doctors that had called her, not because of my call. Mm. And that was just God saying, "Hey, bro. I got this." Mm. You can't do a dang thing. You just spent 3 hours wasting your time being told it's going to be a long time before we see you. Mm. So again, I think that's the experience without perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
I always knew God was in control, but that without having that experience, it wasn't quite as real for me as it is today.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about something that you guys mentioned and just how you've processed it. I think when you're going through suffering, you judge other people based on their level of suffering, whether it's a capital S suffering, lowercase s suffering. And I think that can either harden you towards others. It's like, well, you're not going through what I've gone through. So there's kind of like a minimization of that. But you guys talked about how it's actually helped you love others more.
Yeah.
And so somebody comes to you and they're, you know, bringing to you real suffering, but it's small in comparison. And just how have you worked through loving people well when you just feel like you're such a big burden on you and still carrying other people's burdens that may be tempting to not seem like that big of a deal?
Because I think in your suffering, you can have a self-righteousness too towards others. And I'm not saying that for you guys, but that can be a temptation. How have you guys kind of processed through that?
We maybe have processed this differently. I don't know. So I'll speak for myself. But I've always been highly empathetic, so
I have not.
But I guess I kind of fear that my diagnosis has made other people kind of not want to come with see me with their issues, because it's like, oh well, she's got Parkinson's, and so I don't want to talk to her about whatever. But I can understand. I can't understand all these issues, but I can listen. I can try. Did that answer that? That's not.
Yeah. However you know. However you wanted to answer that. Yeah.
I would say two things to that. Going through this, I think Becky and I have floating dream boats. Becky got these big old swings on the back porch, and we sit for hours talking. It's been therapeutic. We've been our own therapists. Could be dangerous. But I can remember us talking through the reception we were having by family members, mine mostly, and thinking, wait a minute, we're expecting something of them that they may be unable to give. That's on us. Mm. It's on us to expect if we are wanting it, it is we that are wanting it. But maybe it is us that should be loving them through our suffering.
Yeah, yeah. And the reason I say that is because you were one of the, I remember our first phone call. We played pickleball a couple times, and I think you called me out of the blue. I think I remember being in the loft, and you said that one of the things that God has taught you in the season is you don't want to waste your suffering, mm-hmm. and you want to pour yourselves out. And I've seen all sorts of people in this job. Their suffering turns into extreme bitterness, almost like a hatred against everybody. It's like, nobody gets my life, nobody, and it turns into like an isolation and self-preservation thing. And I think your guys is, in what you're going through, pouring yourselves out, maybe arguably even more than you were before, I just think is really beautiful. And so anyways, I just thought that was really encouraging seeing you guys. And you guys know, you guys are in their community, how they love you week in, week out, which has been beautiful.
I do want to touch really quickly on the going through the suffering, and I mean this with the utmost respect. We hear people that are suffering through the loss of an animal, the loss of a vehicle, the loss of a job, the loss of things that in the end we're going to get through. Mm. And I can remember Matt Chandler used to, 10,000 years? he uses this number because in eternity, this is just we're not even going to be able to see it from there. This, my car didn't start. And for those whose cars are not starting tonight, it's a big deal.
Again, this is the ministry where our cars don't start. This is, there's at least three cars that won't start in the parking lot as we go home tonight.
I know, a great mechanic. It reminds me of 2 Kings. My verse for last summer was a verse about David. And at the end of 2 Kings, it says, and David died. A righteous, noble, wealthy, respected man of God. And I don't know if you've read much about David, but that dude, he was an expert sinner. Mm. And yet, when you think of, so he becomes king, he rapes Bathsheba, he sends her husband out to the front lines to die, then he's victorious, then his sons are fighting against each other, killing each other. Mm. If you would have talked to him here, I would have doubted that he would have thought, you know, this will be said of me 50 years from now. Mm. And I just think, you know, even through Parkinson's, I pray that, you know, 30 years from now, oh, and Becky had Parkinson's. Because there's so much more that we can do in this life than focus on Becky can do a lot of things with Parkinson's. There's a few things she can't do. But instead of focusing on this moment and making this moment the rest of our life, let's just make this moment about this moment, not let it define us.
That is really good. That is really good. There's something that you said at lunch last week that I want to highlight, and you can speak into it however you will, and then maybe I'll just ask you one or two closing questions. But you had this line where you said, the freedom of expecting to suffer. And I'll color that in a little bit more. We live in a culture that trains us the opposite. And Jesus, one of the things that he promised us was that we would suffer. But our culture, it's built on do everything you possibly can to not suffer. And there's a freedom in the Christian life to just expect suffering. Not to desire it, but to expect it. And can you maybe talk about that freedom, and specifically maybe to us in the room who are doing everything we can to avoid it, are terrified of it in the future. What is the freedom that you are talking about? And how has that ministered to you?
If y'all aren't suffering now, just buckle up, because you're going to. Like, it's a guarantee. It's death and taxes. It's a guarantee. I mean, I pray you guys don't get a diagnosis like this, but you'll lose somebody, or and your car not starting is legit. it really is legitimate. But I think there is freedom in knowing, like, I don't have control over this. This is the way it's supposed to go. This is biblical. Like, I don't remember what it was that I said during that lunch that spoke to you, but
there's freedom in expecting suffering.
Yeah. Yes, there's freedom in expecting suffering. And we all kind of want it to be over, but suffering can be redeemed and made purposeful. I think I was talking about the tension of knowing God can heal me and that he doesn't. There's also wanting it to be over. I was reading in Joshua about the war. Josh is fighting, and it's war. It's suffering. It's terrible. Instead of praying for, it would have been the easiest thing for him to do. The day was coming to an end. He could have said, "Lord, make this day over. Kill them all, and we'll be done." But instead, he says, "Make the sun stay up." And the Lord made the sun stay up. And I just was struck by that he said, "Let me continue to suffer. Let me continue to fight. Let me continue to do this," instead of make this over. And I think sometimes, we all want to avoid suffering and just hide from it. But when you can just embrace it and have the Lord sustain you, it's a beautiful place to be. The same friend that I was talking about that had her husband was diagnosed with a brain tumor, I can remember seeing them and thinking, like, man, they're really beautifully close to the Lord right now. Like, the reliance that they have on the Lord right now is just, I was jealous, which that sounds so weird, but I can't say that I wish, I can't say that it's worth it, honestly, but it's definitely a redeemed part of this diagnosis is that dependence that I don't think I would have had without this diagnosis.
And by God's grace, he's drawn us closer together too. Yeah. I used to think that we had a perfect marriage. And now I know that we do.
I love that. Well, you guys are, anyways. Okay, couple questions two questions, one for each of you. And you can pray about it. Whoever wants to go first can. You guys are both in this together, absolutely, both suffering. Barry, in particular, if you could speak to the people in the room who are
walking alongside somebody who is deeply suffering, what advice, words of encouragement, direction would you give? Maybe you could think about that. And then Becky, to the people in the room who are suffering, whether it's a huge capital S or lowercase s, what would you say to that person? What hope would you offer? And then we'll wrap up our time with prayer.
I would say, see them and initiate. Initiate was my word of the year for last year. And it's so interesting. If you've ever done a word of the year, good for you. If you've not, try it out. It's a really cool thing how God will show you or give you opportunities to actually act on that word. And in that case, I was struck at the number of times that something would cross my mind. I'd be like, hey, I'll do that later. And then later never came. And then I began to act on, you know, had a good friend. He had just gotten divorced. God put him on my mind. I texted him. So maybe when I say initiate, maybe it is if your friend, your loved one is going through something, to see them, and then when placed on your mind, to act on that in some way.
That's really good.
It could simply be, I love you.
That's really good. Becky?
I guess my advice for people that are suffering now.
Or anything that you'd want to say.
Yeah. I think just perspective of everything is, this world is broken. So don't be surprised and just take it one day at a time. Lean on the Lord. I don't know. Like I said, my only comfort when I'm really having a down day or moment is just to focus on the eternal, because it's all worth it in the end. This is just a blip.
Yeah.
We're just dust. So.
Yeah. I think you had that powerful sentence where you said God dealt with Parkinson's at the cross.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just, I think you were like teary-eyed when you said it, of just like how deep-rooted that hope was within you. Because mm-hmm. Christ dealt with my sin at the cross, and yes, but it's like, and God dealt with the pains of my physical body at the cross, and the hope that is in that is truly beautiful.
Yeah.
Any last words that you guys would want to say before I pray out at all?
I don't know.
That's great.
Thank you
for
this opportunity. It has been really neat for Becky and I to just think through and kind of process what it is that we were going to share. You know, our floating dream boats allow us many opportunities to do that, but just to think of how it is that we can, in the most loving way, share our story has been a really cool experience. So,
absolutely. Well, thank you guys for your transparency. I love you guys a ton. And can you guys thank Barry and Becky?